So last week we started a new sermon series here at Restoration called Second Chances. And we do sermon series usually 2, 3, maybe 5 weeks where we dive more deeply into a topic. And this series is about God being a God of second chances and the importance of that. And I told you last week, I haven't always believed that. I haven't always believed that God is a God of second chances. I used to believe that it was much more dependent on me than dependent on God. Like if I messed up enough, there was no chance for me to have a second chance. But as I've come to understand God more, as I've read more about God, as I've spent more time with God, I have come to believe that God is not just the God of second chances. God is the God of second, third, fourth, and keep on going chances. Because God so deeply longs to be with you and with me. And last week, I talked about there were sort of three things that happened. We used the story of the woman at the well, and we looked at how does Jesus show us this idea of second chances. And we talked about how Jesus meets us where we are. Jesus doesn't want us to stay in the midst of our junk. He wants us to get out of it. And then Jesus wants us to thirst for him. Now today I'm going to talk about seeing with new eyes, how Jesus gives us new eyes to see ourselves and to see the world. So I don't know how many people took on this challenge I gave you last week. I challenged you, if you were here, to go and read the fourth gospel, the gospel according to John, read the whole thing in 1 week. Now if you didn't, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, don't worry. But if you didn't, I want to encourage you to do that this week. But if you did, you found this really odd story, I'm guessing it was odd to me, in John chapter 9. And it's a really powerful story, but it's very odd. Jesus and his disciples are walking around. The disciples are the people that hung out with him, that spent time with him. And they're walking around, and they're moving from place to place, and they come upon this man who was born blind. He's a beggar in the town. He's sitting there, and he's blind, and he's saying, I need something, I need something. And the disciples come upon this man first, and they look back at Jesus, and they ask this really odd question. They say, Rabbi, who sinned so that he was born blind, this man or his parents? So there's this connection between sin and bad things happening to you. Right? When they read this, when the disciples go. And it's one of those moments, I think Jesus has a lot of them when you read the Gospels, where he kind of looks at the disciples like, seriously? You still don't get it? He goes, it was neither him nor his parents. So we think, right, in the first century, maybe this was an odd thing to believe. But there are people who still believe this today. Do you realize that? That if you have something in your life, it's because you've been bad. You've done something wrong. Now, the problem with that is when we read the gospel, Jesus says, that's not true. That's not what's going on here. In fact, Jesus sort of turns the whole thing on its head and says to them, actually, the fact that he's blind makes him better off because he's able to experience the world in a different way. Now, I don't think that Jesus is saying blindness is good. I think Jesus is saying, be aware that it is not sin that leads to this challenge in his life. Now, he quickly then goes on, and this is where I think the story gets really cool, and he remedies the man's ailment. He does what I say. He pulls a Jesus, okay? He spits in the ground. In the dirt. I mean, I think there's lots of ways he could do this. But he spits in the dirt. Think about, like, saliva. Y'all are like, ooh, that is nasty, right? He spits in the dirt. He grabs the mud. He puts it on the guy's eyes. He tells him to go and wash his eyes out. And guess what? The guy can see. Now, I want you to imagine just for a moment. Imagine what that moment was like for him. To be able to see. Not for the first time in a while. The scripture says he was born blind. He was able to see for the first time. Incredibly transformative moment for this man. He can now see and his life is changed. Now, imagine if you're a guy, you've been sitting in town forever and ever. Everyone in the town knows you. They walk by you every day. You've been begging, and all of a sudden people come by and you're not there anymore. You're not on the corner because guess what? You're out moving about. You're out in town now. You want to see all the sights. And as people see you, they say, wait a second. Aren't you the blind guy? Because that's what he was labeled. Aren't you the blind beggar that used to sit on the corner? He goes, yeah, but I can see now. And people are like, what's going on? And he goes, I don't really know this guy, but this guy, he says his name is Jesus, he healed me. He fixed my blindness. Now, at this time, there were these people called religious leaders. The Pharisees were their names, right? The Pharisees. And anytime something religious in nature came up, people would go to the Pharisees and say, hey, figure this out. Fix this. So they grab this man by his collar. They drag him to the Pharisees, and they say, this man's got a story. Wait till you hear this. So the Pharisees hear it, and instantly they are filled with fear. Oh, no. This Jesus guy might have healed him. So what do the Pharisees do? They're trying to follow the law. They're trying to do what's right. They go and they grab the guy's parents. Now, this is not a 12-year-old, right? He's probably somewhere in his 20s, mid-20s, maybe early 30s. And they go to his parents and they go, the Pharisees go, come on now. This guy could see, right? Now, his mom and his dad are terrified because they know if they say the wrong things, the Pharisees will have them executed. So the mom and dad say, well, no, he was blind, and now he can see. And they say, but we don't know how it happened. Now, y'all, the scripture tells us, the story tells us that he came to his parents and he told them what had happened. He said, Jesus healed me, and they were terrified to tell the Pharisees. The scripture says that they knew what was going on. Now, a bunch of conversation is going back and forth, big hubbub in town, the Pharisees, the parents, the guy, and then the Pharisees leave the man with this. They responded, you were born completely in sin. How is it that you dare to teach us? And then they expelled him. No second chance for you, they said. There's no way that something good is coming in your life. Now, many people who study this stuff much more than I do believe that the entire gospel that's written according to John was written to an audience of people who were expelled. People who were put out on the outside of society because they believed in Jesus as the Messiah. That's why they were put out. The Pharisees were pretty terrified of them, and they were put out. Now, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but there are many people who I come into contact with in the church that feel expelled by the church. That feel as if their sin has made them unworthy of being part of the church. Now, rarely does someone come up and go, hey, you're not worthy. But something that happens in their experience says you're not allowed. It may be in an interaction. It may be in something that the pastor says. It may be in a release of confidentiality that they know. But something says that you are expelled from the community, and that's what these folks felt at this point in time. People felt that others weren't worthy of second chances. Now, here's the challenge with the Pharisees. I think they get a bad reputation a lot. The Pharisees don't know what I know and what you know about God. They're actually trying really, really hard to follow the rules. They're trying to follow the law as they know it. They don't understand that God's ultimate second chance was seeing Jesus, sending Jesus to earth. See, they thought that Jesus coming was challenging what God wanted to do. So they're simply trying to stand up. I wonder how many of our churches today fall into this place. I wonder how many of our people today who call themselves Christians fall into this place where they go, they don't understand that God is a God of second chances, because when they read this passage, all they hear is what the Pharisees say, you were born completely in sin. And they don't hear what Jesus says in the beginning where he goes, it was neither one of them. He was just born blind. But the man was expelled in this story by the Pharisees. He was sent out of town, never to return. He had lost his second chance. But then Jesus finds him, and that's the part I want to read to you in the passage this morning, because I think this is so powerful. It says, Jesus heard that they had expelled the man born blind. He heard the story. This town talked a lot. Okay? He heard the story. Finding him, Jesus said, do you believe in the human one? He answered, who is he, sir? I want to believe in him. Jesus said, you have seen him. In fact, he's the one speaking to you. The man said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped Jesus. Jesus said, I have come into the world to exercise judgment so that those who don't see can see and those who see will become blind. Some Pharisees were with him, who were with him heard what he said and asked, surely we aren't blind, are we? And Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you wouldn't have any sin. But now that you say we see, your sin remains. Y'all, there is so much in these seven verses, and we have to package meals today, right? So I'm not going to go over every bit of it, but there's so much going on here. Think about what happens in the very beginning. The very first thing we see is that Jesus searches after this man because it says Jesus finds him. Did you notice that in the passage? It says he heard what was going on, and Jesus searches after him, and therefore, friends, Jesus searches after us. So many times I have conversations with people and people say, we have to be looking for God to find us. But that's not what this passage says. It doesn't say the man was running around on the road trying to find Jesus again. It says Jesus found him. Y'all, my understanding of God's grace is that God is constantly searching for us. God longs for us. God longs to be with us. Our fancy word for that we use in our tradition is prevenient grace. That God goes after us before we even know who God is. And that seems so evident in this passage. That God is running after, searching for. Jesus found him, it says. And then Jesus asked him this really interesting question to us. Do you believe in the human one? Now, the man understood what that meant. The human one was the human form of God. Do you believe in the human one? And the man answers really interesting. He says, who is he? I want to believe in him. That's like standing in front of a celebrity and not realizing it, right? And then all of a sudden go, oh. Right? He says, who is it? I want to believe in him. And this is where we come in. This is what happens when it comes to second chances. This is what I talked about last week when I finished the sermon, when I said, we have to thirst for something new. This man is thirsting. He's saying, I want to believe in him. Another way of saying this is, I want to know God. I want to believe in him. And he did. He had this interaction with Jesus. It was transformative. In that moment, friends, we have to respond. I said this at the end of last week, but I want to hit on it today. We have to respond to God seeking after us. We have to respond to Jesus saying, here I am. We have to respond saying to Jesus is giving us new eyes like the man receives in this story. Many have been inspired by this specific story. Have you ever heard the hymn by John Newton, Amazing Grace? Do you know where was blind, but now I see comes from? It's from this passage. Now, John Newton wasn't blind, right? He's not saying that because he's like, all of a sudden I had sight like the man. What he understood was that blindness comes in the form of not being able to experience all that God has for us. So what do we do? What do we do with new eyes, and what in the world does that have to do with second chances? Sure, for this guy, eyes literally gave him a second chance to see the world in a different way. But I think there are two specific things we can gain from this morning that I saw in this passage this week that really hit me, that I think can hit us. First of all, new eyes help us see ourselves differently. Right? We think new eyes are all about seeing outside. New eyes help us see ourselves differently. This seems to be what happens in this story. I think it's the message that God has for us today. The message that Jesus gives both to the Pharisees. Do you notice that? He interacts with the Pharisees. He gives them this message about seeing things differently, even though they don't hear it. And he gives the message to the guy, and I think he gives the message to us today. New eyes help us to see ourselves as someone that God is searching for. Someone that God is longing for. I spend a lot of time in conversations with people who can't see themselves as beautifully created children of God. They can't imagine that. They can't believe that. They think that they have done something to cause their blindness. Have you ever met anybody who feels that way? I'm not talking about real blindness. I'm talking about things and situations in their life. For some people, blindness for them is loneliness. For some, it's depression. For some, it's loss of a loved one. For some, it's loss of a job. For some, it's an addiction. And people say, I have done something that has led to me receiving this. And I think what this passage tells us is that our blindness does not come from something that we have done, but we need new eyes to see that we are beloved by God. Jesus wants us to see ourselves as people who can receive a second chance. There's an author that I read a little bit of this week. His name is Dennis Merritt Jones. And he writes these things to inspire people to live their best lives. And he's really focused on looking at the interior if you want your life to change. And I wanted to read you something that he writes about seeing ourselves with new eyes. He says, just like Christopher Columbus or Marco Polo, I believe each of us came to this planet hardwired to explore, to push out, to grow and to evolve, to discover new parts of ourselves and our world we have not seen before. He talks about his experience while visiting the J. Paul Getty Museum. He was perched high, overlooking LA. And he said, I had a demonstration of how sometimes we tend to overcomplicate the process of new discovery. Pushing out and growing doesn't always mean getting into a Land Rover and seeking new terrain, or sailing vessels searching for new land, or flying on a rocket ship exploring outer space. And this is the point. He says, sometimes the greatest discoveries are made by exploring inner space. Looking in the cracks and crevices of our belief system, which has everything to do with how we perceive ourselves and our world. In other words, new discovery is also an inside job that invites us to see our lives and our worlds right where we are from a new perspective. I think that what Jesus does is he gives the guy eyes to see his world from a new perspective, to see his life, to see himself, not as someone who is perfect, but as someone who may have believed the exact same thing that the disciples believed about him. He may have believed that he did something wrong to earn it. Jones says new discovery is an inside job. New eyes help us look at our inside differently. They give us eyes to see who God created us to be, and we have to be open to seeing with those new eyes. That's the Pharisees' problem in this story. They're not bad people. They're not awful. They just can't see. They can't open their eyes to see themselves differently. They think they have it all together. They're following the law. And Jesus said something really interesting to them, which caught me and I sat with for a long time looking at it this week. Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you wouldn't have any sin. But now that you say we see, your sin remains. If they think they don't need to do any internal work, if they think they don't need to look differently at their inside, then they're not going to be changed. They think they have it all together, and what Jesus is longing for is them to see themselves differently. Now, here's the final thing. If all the message was about today was how we look at ourselves differently, I think we're missing half of the benefit of new eyes. Because the second thing new eyes do is they help us see the world differently. Think about this guy. Think about going into the town, seeing people, that voice that you had heard over and over again, that you had imagined how someone might look, or that place that someone had brought you to that just was so different. The man had begged on the street for years and years, and the world had labeled him an outcast. And Jesus opens his eyes. The second chance comes not only in how we see ourselves, but how we see the rest of the world. Now think about this guy. He had been treated like an outcast on the outside of community. He could have said, well, then I'm leaving this place. I don't want to be with these people anymore. I can go anywhere I want now that I can see. But what does he do? He runs into town and tells people about Jesus. He tells them about the way that his life has been changed. There is a French author named Marcel Proust. And he has this quote that I love that's been translated so terribly and butchered in different ways. But the best translation I can find says this: the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeing new sights, but in looking with new eyes. I wonder, as you look around your family, as you look around your neighborhood, as you look around your workplace, who do you need to see with some new eyes? Who is someone maybe that you've written off because they annoy you? Because they suck energy out of you? Right? Who is it that you need to look at and see as a valuable person who is worthy of a second chance? And maybe ask the question, is the God of second chances for them? I read a story this week that illustrates this well, about a young woman named Caroline. Caroline had a great addiction to drugs and alcohol, and she had gotten into some other things in her life that weren't dealing with her health well. And somewhere along the line, in her words, Jesus had found her. She had experienced Jesus, and she wanted to turn her life around, and she went to work for this organization called New Name. What New Name does is it works with people who have been affected by sex trafficking. And what they do is they get contact information for people when they find out they're in this situation, and they call them or they text them. And she said, Caroline in her story says, most of the people that I reach out to hang up the phone instantly when I'm talking to them. Most of them don't feel like they have any value when I say, hey, can I just pray for you? Can I just spend a little bit of time with you? And she talked about this one woman who we'll call Julie in this story. And she texted Julie. She said that was a little bit easier than calling. And she texted her and she said, hey, I would love to reach out to you. I would love to talk to you. I would love to get to know you. And here's why. And she told her she wanted to care for her. And she said instantly, Julie sent back some profanities to her in the text and said, I sold my soul to the devil a long time ago. Believing in God is like believing in the tooth fairy. You have nothing that I want. Caroline texts her back because she said, hey, at least I got a response, right? I'm going to interact a little bit more. And Caroline texts her back and said, hey, I just want to tell you a little bit about my past, about my story, about the things that I've struggled with, about the challenges that I've had. And I want you to know there is no part of me that would ever sit in judgment of you. I simply want to let you know that you are loved. The next text back was a little softer. And they text back and forth and back and forth. That was in 2016, and they still have a relationship today. We have to see the world with new eyes. But see, Caroline had to see herself with new eyes before she could go out and see the world with new eyes. The sight that she was given transformed her. It changed her. So I was thinking this week, what's the takeaway? Like, how do I go, hey, go have new eyes, right? When you go, all right, well, that's nice. And I started thinking about it, and I said, you know, something that I don't know that I've ever done, and this is a moment of confession, is I don't know that I've ever read this passage, that I've ever thought about this idea of new eyes, and prayed that I actually had them. I don't know that I've ever prayed that I would look at people in my community differently. I've prayed for them, but I don't know that I've prayed that I would see myself differently. So I thought maybe we just take a minute or two this morning where we could pray first that we would have new eyes to see ourselves as God sees us. And what is blocking us from experiencing that? And second, that we would have new eyes to see the world differently and maybe think about those people who we need those new eyes for. God, we thank you that you give us eyes to see, new eyes to see ourselves differently, to see the world differently. And God, this morning, I feel like what you're calling us to do is to open those eyes, to look around, see things that perhaps we've been blind to realize that the blindness in our own lives doesn't come from sin. And God, what you want is to open our eyes. Holy Spirit, I pray that you would open our eyes, that you would open our lives, that we would be transformed by you. that our experience of you would be rich and good, and that we'd run out into the world to say, hey, look, Jesus did this.